Order this meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. It is 10 a.m. on Tuesday, February 5th. Would those who care to like to join us in the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're now ready for public comment one. This is the comment period for the audience and the public to address topics on today's agenda or anything else that you'd like to bring to our attention. Would anyone care to speak at this time? All right, we're going to move on to item number four on the agenda, open bids for repairs to the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail caused by June 18, 2018 flooding. And Mike Cox has come to the microphone, and I'd like to remind everyone, please, including the board supervisors, to speak into the microphone. We apparently might be having a little trouble with some of the people who are listening to the audio hearing it correctly. So we're going to get really close and friendly with the microphones today. Thank you. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. So you should have a bid tabulation sheet in front of you. The first bid we received is from Towery Construction, Rockwell City, Iowa. Bid bond is complete. Next bid is from Construct Incorporated out of Ames. Bid bond is complete. And their bid for lot number one is $168,218.00. That's 168,218.00. Their bid for lot two is $568,000.00. So 568,000.00.
All right. Thank you. Anybody need any numbers repeated or this? No? Okay. In that case, then, I believe that now you would take those, and who would you work with to verify those numbers and everything and come back to us next week?
Yeah, we'll review these and come back for a recommendation after some consultation with FEMA.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly when we'll be back.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mike. Right. Now, agency reports. Is Elizabeth Miller here?
Hi.
I don't see her. So, all right, we're going to move on then. And the next report comes from Ames Economic Development and Workforce Quarterly Report. And I see Justin Ingram and Brenda Dreyer, Dan Colleen, that are meeting this week. So, at least for now. Good morning, you two.
Good morning. Looking at the intimidating new technology.
Which wants you to really speak to it. I'll take you a minute just to invite people who may be either watching on the video that will be posted later or listening to the audio. If you have any comments about the sound quality, please let us know. This is new technology, and we're still working to get it all balanced out. We appreciate the couple of people who have contacted us to make contact to make comments about what they're hearing or the quality. So thank you. Oh, it looks like we've got it up on the new screen now.
Nice. I guess I wanted to start today with that. I look at where we're at, wrapping up 2018 and looking ahead to 2019 as it relates to our workforce. And I'd be remiss if I didn't really start my comments acknowledging the very strong support that the Story County Board of Supervisors has given to this program of work. And really, without your continued support, we would not be able to be doing the things that we're doing on behalf of our communities, our citizens, and our community. So, let's see. It's not exactly what I tell again, you know, we have these seasonality things that happen in the Story County Labor Shed really around our the university. But so we ended the year down from 1.6 a year ago. So it is indeed the lowest in Iowa. We are really waiting the final official notice really where we sit from a metropolitan statistical area, but as you look over the last 12 months, we are up 600 jobs. Most of that gain does sit in the private sector, although we have seen some growth as well in government and goods producing sectors. So a little bit about unemployment. The Story County Labor Shed, we have received a data update for 2018 wages for both Story County and the Story County Labor Shed. And I need to applaud the state of Iowa. They were very quick to get us that information. We have shared that data not only on our site. I've shared that with Leanne. She is getting it on the county site, and I shared that data with our human resource professional organization as well. So it's really important, again, to have the most current information. And so, again, we've got that available to our business communities and are making it available in a number of places. We have been anxiously awaiting an update to our LaborShed study. You may remember that years ago we would have to go out and raise the funds to support that, collect contributions from our economic development groups, from you all, from our communities. The state of Iowa last year decided they were going to do that for all of the counties across Iowa. They started in the north and we're considered in the south, and so we'll actually be in the update that occurs starting this summer with a complete by June 20th. So I wish we would have been included here, but again, it was a decision really out of our control. So stay posted. We'll be working closely with our business community to collect the needed data so that the state can formulate that report with the 2020 date on that. I want to give you a little bit of glimpse about the activity on the Story County job board. Remember, we highlight this as the gateway to jobs in Story County. We ended 2018 with a total of almost 108,000 searches on that site. It is a standalone site. While it's linked to our chamber and our AEDC site, it really is a standalone site. So those are searches on that site. We had 745 registered job seekers. So those are folks that have gotten word that they could create a profile. They either want to enhance their employment or they're looking to come here and work. I would tell you last week we actually went over 800 registered job seekers. So we always see really strong growth with folks that want to either better their employment situation or come here to work. So that's a group we actively market to. We have 307 registered employers. We know there are more employers than that, so we constantly are encouraging people to use this tool. We remind them it's free for any Story County business to use, really because of the support we have from you all to be able to make it available countywide. We do continue to sweep from Indeed. Again, that gives us the best look at the types of jobs we have available across the county. Really, the matching capabilities come when we have a registered employer posting a job. Those positions get matched against the registered job seekers. And again, the word we're always trying to remind to get out is that this is free for any Story County employer.
Brenda, I have a question. Uh-huh. It was prompted by a conversation I had with a longtime resident of Ames. Linda, I guess she's in her mid-30s. Okay. Mm-hmm. But she said she'd been on the website and she does not have a college degree and so doesn't have really an area of specialty. And to support her 11-year-old son, she has weight stress all of her life. Mm-hmm. So when she gets on, she doesn't find a compatible group of jobs usually. And do we tend to have people, the employers, are they only really posting their jobs that require advanced training or advanced education?
I would say no to that.
Right.
So I'll use Green Hills as an example because I've seen their jobs within the last 48 hours. So there would be an example where they're looking for dietary associates, they're looking for part-time CNAs, they're looking for full-time CNAs, or looking for, so again, those positions are on there. Again, it's just
sometimes searching to find that. Remember that this is an important piece. It's our really cornerstone where we drive activity. Again, don't ever hesitate to have them reach out to workforce development as well. So I always say for somebody that's looking for work, you know, check all of the different sources, but workforce development would also be an opportunity for that person, not Iowa Jobs. And again, they're able to do a search within a region. Also there, they could go to the Iowa Works office. So, but again, I appreciate that feedback, but I do know because I see all the postings that there are a wide array of folks that, you know, we see our downtown retailers, we see our service providers also use this. So really, that's one of the things I think is the most unique about our job board, is it does have a varying degree. And I would tell you that I'm always welcome to talk to anybody that wants to work in Story County. So don't hesitate, because I'm probably the most familiar, I can usually give folks a strong lead of where they should be going to work. So,
Thanks.
Or applying.
Thank you.
Yep. So I wanna hit a couple of our programs that we're doing as part of our menu of services. Homebase Iowa, we've received 216 leads as I like to say, Leanne and I were energized to jumpstart the Homebase Iowa program back in the fall of 2017. Those are leads that very specifically say they want to work in Story County. It is a strong partnership. Part of what we're promoting is the incentives that you offer folks that come and live here as part of that program. We have five different touches with those leads. We send them personal notes. We send them information about the relocation package. We follow up with emails, and then that includes videos. So we track and monitor all of that activity and then really focus on the results side of that. So as you know, we're working on bringing out a new publication called Livability, hopefully sometime this month, Dan, right? And I'm really excited to be able to tell you that in that we are planning on a feature from a Homebase Iowa that. So if all goes as planned and the story comes through, I'm excited about the feature that can be included in on that publication. So
do you have to pay for them?
No, that was part of what we included as our workforce, is being able to feature that story. So, yep. So again, I know the interview is done, and I have not seen the final draft, but again, we're working on pushing out visibility and telling the story of what's happening with that program. On the My Iowa Future, this was the state's workforce initiative for 2017 and 2018. We continue to get leads that come in on a monthly basis. So we've received over 1,500 leads as a result of our sponsorship of that program. And again, those leads get treated with multiple touches and tracking as well. These are really folks that are in Midwest college markets that we know that are either thinking about a career move in the future or actively looking now. New for 2019 is the sponsorship of the Technology Association of Iowa, a program called the Iowan Project. So they are spending money and energy marketing the folks that have ties to Iowa, really in the STEM fields. We have lots of openings in STEM and anticipate more of those openings. So we have the ability with our sponsorship not only through their digital media and marketing efforts to talk about working in Ames and Story County, featuring our database. We also have an opportunity to highlight some of our technology companies with this effort. And then we'll be participating in the meetups that are occurring that will occur in Denver, Colorado, Chicago, and Minneapolis this year. So it's just a new way to maybe get at folks that have ties here specifically in technology and engineering. A couple new things to report. A new news is that we heard from our customers, continue to hear from our customers, our investors, that workforce is their number one concern and issue. We feel like we have a real opportunity to build on the programs we have in place by committing some additional resources to that. So we'll be announcing a new hire in our office to really assist me in workforce-related initiatives. So also looking ahead to this is that not only did we have low unemployment, but going into 2019, in the past 18 months, we've announced 962 new jobs. So it's going to continue to be a focus of our organization. And so the workforce development coordinator in our office will be really working with our school district to further engage the workforce of tomorrow. We'll do work as it relates to college relations, not only at the university, but our community colleges across the state of Iowa. They'll be actively engaged in the summer internship programming. And really new is that we're going to be moving our responsibility for leadership programming and our young professionals to this person in our organization, knowing that those things are important to growing a workforce and keeping a workforce and engaging our young people so they feel a part of things that will stay with the companies when they come here to work. So stay posted. Like I said, we're very close to announcing our final candidate for that position. That position will actually report to me and be part of our economic development team. On the career college front, when I submitted the presentation, I had four commits to where we're going to be this spring. We actually added the college, Western Iowa Technical College, down in Council Bluffs. We've added them to the list as well. So DMAC will be there tomorrow for an engineering career fair over in Boone. Indian Hills has a strong IT program. We'll be there recruiting in April. Iowa Central is so close. A lot of our employers pull from Iowa Central. That will be in Fort Dodge in March. And then there's a two-day event up in Sheldon. They have an outstanding manufacturing program in Sheldon as well as a strong healthcare program. So we did almost 10 last year. We really focused in on the community colleges where we feel like we have the best leads for our business community. And then we've got three virtual career fairs coming up, the Big 12, Hiring Our Heroes, which is focused on veterans, again, perfect match for our home-based Iowa incentive, and then the College Athlete event. And that was successful because, again, this is a group of people that is used to relocating, moving, going to college elsewhere. And so they are very open to considering relocation to Iowa. Next. And I'm going to end my comments with a couple things related to career fairs, really, that are more of a public focus. We will be participating and co-sponsoring an event over in Marshalltown on February 20th. And very excited. I was trying to do the count of Story County employers, up to 80 employers at this event. And this is going to be a large event. It's in conjunction with the community college, the workforce development offices, our efforts, and the Des Moines office. The unemployment numbers at the end of the year, don't quote me exactly on this, were 4 or 5% higher in Marshall County than Story. So they continue to have a much higher unemployment rate, even though the employers over there are reacting and recovering from the tornado tragedy. But excited about that event coming up here later this month. And again, I would assume that almost half of those employers are from Story County. And then I am thrilled to announce that we can actually talk about a year schedule of career fairs here in Story County with Iowa Works. So we had a great event in December. We worked closely with our human service providers, and we had a record number of attendees attend the event, and I feel like we've got some good, strong networks we can build on to get the word out about that. So we were able to share the date so as our human service providers are busy with people, they can proactively talk about getting ready for a career fair event. And We hold all of those. Again, we think it's important to be consistent on location. So those will be 10 to noon at the Ames Library. And again, those are free for our employers to participate in. Pesticides, we do limit between 20 and 25 employers that are actively hiring in order to participate for that. I want to give you one other date that has surfaced since I published the presentation, but on February 27th at noon, I'm excited to tell you that we're officially going to do the open house as it relates to the Iowa Works Office. So you'll be getting some official invitations on that event. Remember that we worked really hard to get this back here, so we have a presence. We have computers and resume help and mock interview help for folks that are in need of work for our businesses. To utilize that office to conduct open interviews anytime. And so the staff from Des Moines, we're expecting quite a group, and we'll make sure you get the invitations by letting you get it on your calendars. They'll be at noon at the office right across from the DMC. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation on workforce. Any questions?
I'm looking at the board members.
Again, thank you for
your support. Thank you. Okay.
And I'm going to leave a couple things here. Here's a recap of our program of work and then a flyer on the February 20th event.
Thank you. That would be Dustin moving over, or Jan coming up next?
Sure.
Okay.
So good morning, board. I'd like to start with some familiar numbers. Brenda started this several months ago. Last year,
okay,
actually.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
It's not showing that's recording, so let's just move to
switch.
General
audio.
Yeah,
sure.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm starting with these familiar numbers that Brenda's presented in the past as well. And the main thing I want to point out is even though we started this position with me being the lead on the contract back in September, we've really maintained our commitment to the communities in terms of the exposure that we've given into our offices. In particular, is I've been to, I think, every city now since taking lead on the contract. And as you know, when you speak with folks in these councils and small towns, the projects and ideas, they really start to snowball, and we have a lot to work with. And so you see the 34 city council meetings just last year alone. And a lot of discussions that I've been having have been a result of those meetings. Also, the supervisors' meetings. It's been a pleasure for me to listen to your ideas in terms of especially economic development, funding, and support, the programs that you're considering, again, right now. And I'd love to contribute to that conversation in the future as well. We can go to the next slide, though. And so I'd like to divide this up into economic development and community development. I see the contract, and it's kind of giving us that opportunity to pursue both angles in our communities. One place in particular that's just really booming right now is Collins. And so Collins is only a town of about 500 people, but they've seen the expansion of business in their downtown. I think they've added at least four new businesses. Talked to them a couple of weeks ago. It seems they've even opened up that gas station there, too. And as you know, they've also made improvements cosmetically to their downtown as well in terms of painting. Story County Economic Development Group, through that meetings or that membership, they received an allocation for a mural to embrace the local history. And it's really nice to see Collins take the lead on several projects for their downtown. Nesco Family Medical Clinic in Deering, there were a couple of technical hiccups in terms of medical recording, medical records there at that location, so they weren't able to open at the expected date last year, but they are now open and in business. It's an excellent asset and amenity for that community to attract, especially new residents and families. As you know, the city's later submitted a community catalyst building remediation grant application, and that is the $100,000 in funding from the state. You're familiar with the project bank building in Deering, the same source of funding, but that's to recruit Grossman Technologies into its downtown. If you're not familiar with Grossman Technologies, that's a wastewater treatment solution company. They use science-based technology whereby you have vertical rotating belts that go into wastewater, and it picks up nitrates and phosphorus. The algae kind of feeds on that. There's sunlight coming in because it's vertical, it catches that and it grows. And it cleans the water in that way, but also they can pelletize that in the end and have a value-added approach to that product. And so they're wanting a demonstration facility in Slater, which they're proceeding on, but also those downtown office spaces, and that's contingent on an award through the Community Catalyst Grant. And that would be the addition of several new jobs. And we're talking pretty high wage jobs, technological jobs, and that kind of thing. So, as you know, the administration facility is coming. The current one is in Chicago. They definitely want to stay here in Iowa, first of all, where they can take folks to show them what's going on. They also would like to extend an invitation to you. There's not an exact date yet, but they're working on a date to have an open house for that. So
you would be all three supervisors, correct?
I'm sorry?
You, meaning the board of supervisors.
Correct.
Yes,
correct.
Okay, thank you.
And then the other thing I'd like to mention in terms of economic development is the city of Roland. They've had this light industrial area for years. They expected some movement on that. It's been a little slower than they anticipated. And so we decided to go through with a building code review at the request of developers, the city council, and the Roland Area Development Corporation. So the product of that is they're not changing their building code, but they are adding an appeals process and an appeals board to deal with any complaints or concerns about that building code. They've also decided to proceed with a new building inspector, Mr. and Kim, that is more appropriate for their community. And we're working on a process with the Roland Area Development Corporation to acquire feedback from developers in terms of business satisfaction, development satisfaction, so that we have an idea of the hurdles that they could go through in that community. One big project that I've dedicated a bunch of time to recently is the Cambridge Opera House redevelopment project. This is also on the radar for Iowa Economic Development Authority's Community Catalyst Grant. And that will be $100,000 for the project if awarded in April at the Rural Summit. However, back in December, we also submitted a grant application to the USDA for $360,000 in funding. We couldn't have done that without the partnership with Trusted Communications, who's pitching in $50,000. And the way this would work is that if awarded, that funding would go to Huxley Communications to issue a loan to the city of Cambridge. On repayment, though, that would turn into sort of a revolving loan that Huxley Communications can use for similar economic development projects. And so we're proceeding on that $650,000 project all in all, but altogether we're looking at $460,000 just in external funding support for that. We wanted a decision prior to this, but because the government shut down, the USDA rural development was closed, and so we couldn't have discussions about whether or not we'd receive an award.
If the math is right in my head, I just did, there's $40,000 missing in this formula. Is that correct, of your total? So is Cambridge kicking in that $40,000?
Correct. That's okay. The plan. That's the plan. And we're also looking at derelict building grant through the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. So that would chip away at that. The idea is that we're just trying to pull as much partnership and support together to make the project feasible as possible. And so $460,000, we've already gotten halfway there if we receive those awards. And so we're making a good bit of progress on that. And just in terms of the project itself, this would be two commercial units on the bottom floor for business development, and also three housing units on the upper story. And so just a few community development updates as well. This picture here is from the Kiwanis Spaghetti Dinner in Story City. And I attended that. I've also joined the Ballard Kiwanis, and we're trying to be more active in that part of the county as well. As you know, McCallsburg received $25,000 in support from the Story County Community Foundation. That's for park improvements in the downtown. That's the first time McCallsburg has ever submitted an application for full support from Story County Community Foundation. And I also received, I believe it's at Linda's lead here, a call from some folks in McCallsburg looking to start a wellness center. And they're receiving space from Neskota School District for the old school building. And we're trying to point them in the right direction in terms of house acquire equipment and funding to make that possible. They're really relying on Collins as an example. They have an extremely successful wellness center in their downtown, as you know. So they're building on that example to proceed there. And that's one thing that we see, you know, when you connect these different communities, there are so many different synergies that can develop, as well as complementary types of projects where they can share information and kind of best practices on that. Roland has set a full date for early, a bond referendum vote, actually, for full redevelopment for March, I believe it's March 5th, it's early March. And so that pool is about 50 years old. It needs extensive repair, and they see that as a major amenity for their community. As we have these economic pressures and job growth happening in our industries, Roland wants to be able to capitalize on that growth and new residents and families. And one thing that they really don't want to lose is that pool, because that's what many of those families, especially for children, could really utilize. The Gilbert School District also conducted a strategic planning session that we joined. Linda can attest to this. I think there were two major takeaways for me.
Supervisor Merkin was there.
Supervisor Merkin was there, correct. And so there were two major things that stood out to me. The first was, in terms of economic development, the first was there's an awareness there of those economic pressures that are occurring in the periphery of Gilbert. And so the school district is aware of the growth that's happening. They just want to make sure that they're prepared for new families and growth in their student population. And then the second thing also was an interest in workforce training and development. I know Brenda's attuned to this, but they really do want to expand things like their SCALE program, where they expose their students, working with community colleges and economic development groups, to industries and to communities that can provide them with opportunities to seek employment in the future. And then final note here is communities have appreciated housing trust fund funding. And Collins itself has received four applications that they've proceeded on, and I think they've completed all four of those rehabilitation projects under budget. And so we're really appreciative of that. Other communities have questions about how they can market that program to folks in their communities who may not want to seek that assistance, and also in places like Gilbert that have a pretty high appraised value in terms of their evaluation in terms of residency, may have certain neighborhoods that can really utilize that program. And so we're working through the Story County Economic Development Group. Amber Corrieri just came in and spoke with us prior to the presentation at the last meeting, and we're really having this conversation so that they can put the best foot forward with housing rehabilitation. And that's it for me, in case you have any questions.
I'd just like to thank you for following up with the folks from Carlsberg, because they had some real interest, and I didn't know exactly where to send them, and I identified you, and you've got a lot of resources there, so thank you for that. And also for you attending the strategic planning meeting. So I was also impressed. A couple things that I heard also were concerns about diversity and meeting the health needs there. So I thought that was an excellent.
Thank you. That's definitely my pleasure to attend those next meetings.
And one request. I didn't see the PowerPoint that you just utilized on our packet. Could you send that to me?
Sure.
Because I'd like to have that for my record.
Just do that.
Thank you.
Thank you all. I see Dan still sitting here. So usually Dan doesn't have to wear a microphone or he has something to say. So what's your call name?
Well, thank you. I really have nothing to say this morning. Supervisor Olson, I was here to support the team. I would say that Dustin is really off to a terrific start, and just the number of programs you referenced this morning are highly indicative of his ability and his desire and interest to help the communities around Story County. We were in a meeting earlier this morning down at Huxley. That was a good opportunity talking about a number of good things happening down there. We were in, I see Mark Jackson from Story City here this morning. We have an opportunity in Story City here in the next few weeks, we hope, for an economic development project. And so across Story County, I continue to say this, and I continue to feel like a bit of a broken record, but it's really a good time to be here. There's opportunities across for folks that choose to live and do business here. So I just want to thank you for your ongoing support, and we appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing in knowledgeable talent over and over again to honor this contract. So just, I appreciate it. Thanks. Next, we move to consideration of minutes. We have the special meeting minutes of January 24th, and then we have the minutes from the January 29th meeting. So, motion.
Move for vote.
Okay, no discussion. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Consideration of personnel action.
I would move to the motion.
Second.
Okay. Conversation? None. Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Consent agenda.
I'll move to the motion.
Second.
Merchant?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
And that brings us to now item 12.1, discussion and consideration of the purchase of a 2019 Ford 250 Super Duty 3/4 ton truck with no equipment from Ames Ford Lincoln for $26,700 after trade-in. So this is unmuted. Josie Brogan, President.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a new truck from our FY20 budget work session. It's moved to FY19. So, request to purchase the truck and snowplow and all the other accessories that go along.
Turn to the board and see if they have any further questions or comments.
Yeah, we would go ahead and purchase it out of FY19 funding at $26,700 after trade.
Second motion.
Further discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
You have a truck coming your way.
Thank you.
Next, discussion and consideration of one additional telecommunicator personnel in the Story County Sheriff's Office Communications Division effective March 3rd, 2019. Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald and Commander Dina McKenna are approaching the mic. Good morning.
Good morning.
Please go forward.
During our budget presentation for FY20, we had brought the attention to the board supervisors of our need for an additional dispatcher, a communication division. With that being considered by the board supervisors, we asked that if that should come to pass and the board accept that recommendation, we ask that instead of waiting until the first of the fiscal year, that we hire that communicator immediately. One of the things that we realized is that when in 2014 board supervisors authorized us, allocated us to have an additional supervisor, additional communicator, what happened was our overtime and the demand placed on the rest of the staff having to come in and fill vacancies continuously, virtually dropped off the cliff. We'd still, of course, have overtime things like somebody calling in sick or something of that nature. But reshuffling schedules and demanding overtime and vacations be canceled virtually came to an end. Well, currently, we're at a position where we believe we have another staff relief need of 1.7% we're actually needing. One telecommunicator would bring us up to relieve the additional staff that we have. You all are aware of the new advancements and communications that we have going on throughout the county and those advancements that are yet to come. We have currently, we are down one dispatcher from the end of June when dispatcher resigned. And then we have one that started on the first of this year. It's been out on FMLA and does not expect to return until the end of March. And we have word now that the police department has just given a conditional offer for a police officer to another one of our dispatchers. So we're looking at another one would be down three at that point. And that's about the additional person that we're asking. We have one of the toughest things that we have, not only in Story County, but in all law enforcement, it seems like, in Iowa, especially the central part of the Midwest, is recruitment efforts. All of our recruitment efforts, our numbers are way down. Basically, we have such low unemployment that we're seeing in Iowa that I guess is not to be expected. Currently on our list, we have three telecommunicators that are acceptable. And with these, as we're allowed to fill these vacancies and as they develop, we're hoping they'll hang on until we can grab them. And then we'll, again, like we've been doing, continuously evolving in an ongoing recruitment and testing process. So, Dina, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
I don't think necessarily. I think, as the sheriff had mentioned, overtime has become a very cumbersome item within the division, and it affects all staff, but specifically senior staff who've been here for a number of years. And so being mandated to work those 12-hour shifts becomes more and more cumbersome for the staff involved. And obviously, we want to keep a hold of those staff as long as we possibly can. And with that, for everyone within this division.
Thanks.
made a good appeal during the workshop, and I had not thought about the length of time it may take between having someone who's qualified and doing the job. Open it up to the supervisors here. Comments or questions?
It's a clarification that it means that we've got to identify an extra $21,000 for this fiscal year in order to do this. I think it's a good idea, especially if I didn't know about the conditional offer to one of yours. It'd be advantageous to go ahead and get somebody in as quick as possible, just so we don't have that same learning curve without somebody there. So I'm actually in favor of this. I think it's important to note that no position is approved until we finally adopt the budget for funding. No position is funded even after approved until we finally adopt the budget. But I would suggest that we want to go ahead and get this dispatcher position operational as quick as we possibly can. So I'll move that we make this effective March 3rd, 2019.
I'll second the motion.
Discussion?
So it's not a permanent position now. It's basically a temporary position at this point until it's approved for the FY20 budget.
So I believe that this is approval of the position, which would be longer term. What the only part I was underscoring is until we adopt our budgets on March 12th, I think it's March 12th, we haven't said. Anything can happen with the funding. And so I just underscore, I don't expect it to happen. But as I take this, Linda, this is approval of this position, and instead of starting at July 1st, we're starting at March 3rd.
I'm going to ask, well, go ahead. You may be asking what I'm asking. You go ahead. So from the period of March 3rd until June 30th, we're taking it out of our fiscal year 19 budget, and so that will be an amendment down the road, correct? I see Lisa Mark for that there. So that period of from the 3rd of March until June 30th will be taken out as an amendment, correct?
Correct.
All right.
Yeah, so we're going to have to amend salary dollars anyway under this spring. This would just be an additional $21,385.10 that we would have to amend in as part of salary.
As part of that salary.
Right.
So then between the 3rd and the 12th, those 9 days, I think that's what maybe Supervisor Merkin is asking about. Is it still considered a full position, an offer for a full-time ongoing position, given that we don't vote on the budget until the 12th? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay.
So
it's permanent, not full-time. It's a full-time position, whether it's temporary or permanent.
Thank you.
So two separate items, right? One is approved positions. The second is funding of those approved positions. We probably have two or three positions in Story County that are approved positions that we aren't funding right now. Does that sound about right, Alyssa?
I think we're funding all.
Well, I think we've got a couple positions that we've got that we still got on the books that we aren't funding. But that is irrelevant, except to say it is possible to have an approved position without funding it, and that's the difference that I see from the 3rd to 12th. I don't expect anything. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page and everybody's clear of what can happen as we try to get this budget to work.
Sheriff, you said, how many positions do you have that are vacant now or coming vacant again?
Well, when you run an operation like the sheriff's office, it's be kind of a shell game. And we're asking for a position to be starting now, if you're familiar with. But we had one position we're down, and we've been vacant that position since the end of June. Then we're going to have another person that's going to be coming up now with a conditional offer for 8. So that's 2 right there. And then we have one person that's going to be back, we're expecting, no later than the 1st of April, that's been gone for 3 months on FMLA.
And then a follow-up. When you post a position, what is it usually, what is your timeline for actually offering the position?
Again, that depends on if we have a list or if we do not have a list. If we have a list, which right now our list is down to 3 dispatchers on that list that are acceptable, and providing they don't get another job before we have an opportunity to offer them this job,
That would be them getting a conditional offer. They would have to go through the psychological test, the background investigation, and the physical that's given by our doctor.
So what did they should take? I'm sorry, I didn't know about you.
No, then after those three are successfully completed, then we I offer the person a full-time job, and they work with us to see when their soonest available start date. They have to separate from employment. That will take anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, depending upon where they're working, if they have to relocate. And then they will go through a minimum of a 3-month officer training program within the dispatch to learn the job.
So what I was trying to get at with that was that you've got some time frame from posting a position to offering a position, and you have a proposed new position for this year. We have a vacant position, and you have another one that's going to come vacant. So when you refer to it as a shell game, if for some reason I wouldn't anticipate it, but the bottom would fall out of it, you know, you've got options.
Limited. Well,
yeah. And you say, you know, Supervisor Sanders is pointing out that until the budget's approved for next year, it won't be an authorized, you know, it won't be 100% sure position. That's why I'm bringing up. That's why I'm saying.
Okay, I understand. We only extend what board supervisors allow. And right now, two positions, soon to be three positions, we're going to be down. A big concern of mine is that of the workload of the staff. And the overtime, although you have to stay into the basic positions, a lot of that is consumed by the overtime, and that goes up. But not only financially the overtime go up, but burnout to the existing employees, and then we'll be seeing if the job works or not.
I'd like to approach this from a little different angle. How did you pick the third rather than the 12th?
Basically, what that is that has to go with payroll, and so the third is when you would start an employee by the payroll thing.
All right. So there is, we all acknowledge there is a 9-day period where there's a good faith period of having offered an employee a job as a permanent full-time position, correct?
Yes.
Given that acknowledgement by Supervisor, or pointing that out by Supervisor Sanders, are both of you comfortable still with that, going with March 3rd? Okay. Supervisor Merkin, are you comfortable with it?
Yes, and I'll make a motion to approve the
We've already got a second.
You may do that. All right. Sanders.
Aye.
Merkin.
Aye.
Olson. Aye. There you go.
Thank you, Board.
Thank you. Now we're at the discussion and consideration of asset recommendations for storytelling funding for fiscal year 1920. I'm Jeff Kodoff of the budget. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. For you have the fiscal year 20 recommendations made by the asset volunteers. And I do have a few of the services I want to go through just briefly, and any questions you might have we can address as well. I will say that all of the funds that the Board of Supervisors had approved for the asset process were allocated. So in past years, we may have had some that was funds that were left over, and we just kind of held that in an asset line item in case there were other needs that came out during the fiscal year. But in this case right now, everything has been allocated. So I'll draw your attention under access line 7, the domestic abuse crisis and support, the homicide victim service. That was a brand new service introduced to asset by access last summer. In hopes for funding, the request was just shy of $80,000 to hire a full-time person with benefits to provide this level of service. The asset admin team did talk with access staff about the level of that request and it being a brand new service. What had happened was this was a service that was provided by an agency in Polk County, and it served both Polk County and Story County.
It was funded through some grants through the Attorney General's office. Those grants were depleted, and the Polk County Agency said we can no longer serve storytelling. And so Access was approached about providing the service. And through the work session discussions with the volunteers and the asset admin team, we really believed that we didn't have a level of funding that was available to fund this at its full request, which was needed. And so we felt that the other services within the Access agency probably met priorities a little bit higher, like the shelter and their sexual and domestic abuse services. So none of the funders funded this particular service. In the meantime, Access did notify Access they received a six-month grant, and so they are proceeding with a part-time person to provide the service, and then they'll look at additional funding strategies for fiscal year 20 going forward.
The full description, the full email, the description that will fit within this particular cell on the spreadsheet says homicide.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this was a grant for families if someone had been killed related to domestic abuse?
Yeah. And yes, families related to that level, yes, that level of incident. And it may be counseling services, it may be just basic kinds of needs that the family or the individual may have needed. So,
thank you for the information. I'm disappointed that right now we're not in a position to be able to fund this based upon the volunteers.
Yeah, I'll just note we're up $2,000 with Access for what we were able to contribute last year.
Thank you. Next.
Drop down to line 27, Boys and Girls Club, their Nevada site that was opened last fall. So they, from Story County, they had requested $5,000, and so we almost met that entire request at $4,083. But again, historically, the county dollars have went towards providing support to kids living outside the city of Ames, although over the years when the Ames site became more of a draw for all those services, we're funding Ames kids as well. But you may recall there was some fundraising and space became available to open a different site in the Mesa. So, at this point in time, I believe they can serve up to 40 individuals at that Nevada site, and they have between 20 and 25 kids enrolled. There's about 12 that attend on a regular basis.
Did it come up during the discussion at the hearing with the Girls Club about a change in fundraising mail out? I received one as a former donor or a donor to Boys and Girls Club personally that looked like it must have cost $3 to $5 to produce. And I was just, it didn't come up.
Okay.
I just wondered the change is how it was taken. All right, go ahead, please.
Taken on page 2 under Emergency Residence Project, lines 45 and 48 are two new services to the asset process. And both have to do with rapid rehousing. Line 45 is the assistance for basic needs. So that would be money to go towards somebody's rent or deposit or maybe transportation costs. Line 48 is the service coordination for the administrative side to provide this rapid rehousing program. So there are two components, if you will, to providing the rapid rehousing under ERP's agency. And what I would like the board to talk about is the dollar amount on line 45, that $1,637 for basic needs. And why I would like to have a discussion with you about this is these are dollars that the county is already providing for similar kinds of services through general assistance. So we will help with food pantry, we'll help with transportation, we'll help with rent. So in essence, it could be seen as a duplication county is required to provide. So if there is approval of this particular line item, I think it's fair to say that then we could see some other agencies come forward and in the coming years asking for dollars. Now, community services coordinates with ERP and the other agencies that provide these kinds of services to make sure that we're helping the individual with their rent to make up their rent package for a particular month. But the actual allocating of county dollars to an agency for this specific reason just has not been done before.
Is this, when I read the C basic needs, sometimes what I think about is that people still need deodorants, people still need shampoo, and we obviously don't put out, we don't fund those types of things for community services. Am I misunderstanding basic needs for this particular line?
Well, and we can fund those things through community services. Or through, we do have a line item for, I think it's under food assistance, but it is brought in as a cover if there's some basic needs. Like shampoo, soap, baby diapers, many members of family need. For the most part, the individuals are accessing all that through one of the food pantries. And I know places like ERP get additional funds, maybe through donations, to be able to provide those things. But the kinds of client services for this particular line item would be a rent, deposit, transportation, and food.
So it wouldn't expand to those that I was thinking about anyway.
They could broaden it, but that's what they had put in their application.
I'm referencing over to the Hunger Collaboration that met just a couple weeks ago. The MICA food pantry is up 7% in the amount of visitors coming in for the last 3 or 4 months. Salvation Army, she gave it to us instead as a number, 1,700 families a month. Some of them haven't been to the food pantry in 2 years. But prior to that, they had been regular visitors. So so I am looking at the $1,600 for, say, maybe needs related to the food pantry instead, and I'm wondering if, you know, ERP is finding some of their residents or clients are not getting the assistance even they're needing at the food pantry. And I don't have that answer. It's just something I'm putting out there about the $1,600. I hear what you're saying about, will others open this line category up and come back and ask. But I also trust, I'm wondering why our volunteers kind of put that money in, given that they understand that.
Well, and one of the county's priorities is housing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where the line of thinking comes with the top of meeting that housing priority. The other thing that the asset volunteers we're not privy to because it hadn't been discussed yet is community services and the potential of adding a housing service coordinator position in that office. And then again, working with all of these agencies to put together a longer term housing plan. There's a lot of overlap between food community services, ERP, Good Neighbor, Salvation Army, a lot of coordination that goes on there. So, Laura, you mentioned the option of these funds maybe being considered for a food pantry, and we'll get to that a little bit later.
Okay.
We did have an organization who has a food pantry who asked the county for the first time for assistance with their food pantry. The other option would be to, if you drop that down to line 48, the coordination part of the Rapid Rehousing Program, ERP had asked the county for $4,159. So you could fold that $1,637 into that particular line item, because what that commission is going to do is they're going to work with life skills counseling, employment assistance, budgeting, referring to other community services, which really kind of like a service coordination case management kind of position. Another option would be if you wanted to just leave that $1,637 into an asset line item, and it's there in case
other needs come up with other services through the course of fiscal year 20. So those are a couple of other options.
Just for discussion purposes, I'd be interested in moving it into 948. Seems like a good solution if you're worried about setting up precedent for leaving it where it is. I don't know how that relates to the line item, though, with MICA, but you said you were going to discuss that later.
I wonder that back to the service coordination, if that would not shift to the position we're going to fund, or if we're on track to fund for the housing service coordination, or the position. So, because I hate to see duplication of service coordination when you're right, people are going to many agencies and then they're working at least on the homelessness itself, which we were. So, any other thoughts from the board?
Well, I'm there to speak to that.
And just for clarification, the service coordinator working within ERP is working with individuals who are at the shelter. And moving them out, where community services would be working with individuals to prevent them from going into shelter. So that's a very good question, but it's a very distinct difference.
So I would suggest we come back to this once we get to the end of the entire conversation with that segment.
Okay. Page 3, line 91, Heartland Senior Services, just wanted to point out home-delivered meals under 60, so this is for a handful of folks who do not meet the 60-year-old threshold, which is when the Older Americans Act funding comes into play for Heartland Senior Services. So these are a handful of folks who have been getting Meals on Wheels delivered to them. They either have physical disabilities or mental disabilities. And it was a caregiver's grant through Aging Resources of Central Iowa that was funding them, and that grant ended, I believe, last May or June. So that's what that line item is about. It has been the county's priority in terms of food. And then dropping down to line 110, I just wanted to point out, so this was school-based mental health. This was a program that had historically been funded by DCAT, and when the DCAT funding ended, ASSET picked it up. And for fiscal year 20, LSI is not asking for any funding for it, and so that they have just abandoned the program.
School districts, if they pick that program up then, or they are offering a substitution?
They may be. I'm not sure. Okay. Page 4, line 123, Mary Greeley Medical Center, their lifeline service. They did not ask for funding from ASSET for that for fiscal year 20. They are continuing to provide it. They are using service Phillips. Communication is the service. They have upgraded the types of devices that they're providing the individuals, and individuals are still getting the service, and they're paying it on a fee for service, but it's based on their income. And so Mary really said, you know, they're able to keep the service provided, but they're not needing asset funding. Line 127, MICA's Head Start Preschool. You may recall that initially they were losing a grant through Boost for this service, but that has since been resolved, and so they withdrew the request from ASSET. There are no dollars allocated there. On page 5, line 168, Salvation Army. This is the food pantry. They've had a food pantry for several years, and they have requested funding from the county for the first time. And I want to point out that Salvation Army is providing food to pantries located in Nearing, Colo, and Cambridge. So it is pretty encompassing then of the county.
And sure. I also point out there that Salvation Army received a community foundation grant also for a new van to help transport not only food out county, but when the pickups from the many locations in Ames then are, they're better able to get perishables out to those small food pantries twice a week. So I feel very comfortable with the $1,500 that might help them with however they need to spend that money.
Lines 182 and 183 will be the volunteer center. All funders, level funded, those two services, volunteer management and youth engagement. The volunteer center, when they submitted their budget, had shifted a lot of expenses over to assets for these services. And the history behind that is typically the volunteer center has helped the asset agencies manage volunteers and recruitment of volunteers. And just over the period of time, a lot of agencies are doing that in-house. They either have a volunteer coordinator themselves, or they have placed that responsibility on an existing staff so that they can just focus on their own volunteer needs and not have to look for outside assistance with that. So I think what we're going to see going forward with the volunteer center is figuring out how that the services that they provide fit into our work. And they have been notified about that. We had discussions with the volunteer center board prior to the allocation process, so they are aware of those ongoing conversations. And lastly, on page six are the YSS services, and I just want to remind everyone that we have several services that are being transitioned over from the juvenile court budget into the asset process, and those are our general fund. So lines 187, 190, 199, 201, 205, and 207 reflect the transition of those funds. And some of those services had already been funded through assets, so they are funded through assets and juvenile court. So those dollar amounts are going to look a little bit significantly higher as a result of that. I do want to point out, and for the record, line 207 is outpatient, primarily mental health services, and because counties cannot fund a direct service to a client, what the dollars are going towards here funding collateral services. So if there's a therapist at YSS who's working with an individual and they want to contact that client's teacher at school, or maybe a parent or a sibling or another family member just to help provide a more cohesive treatment plan for that individual, those dollars are going for those collateral kinds of contacts. It's not for the therapist direct time spent with the client. I know it sounds like we're splitting hairs, but that's how we have to work this.
What the law says.
Exactly. Yeah. And I talked with YSS about this before they even submitted their budget last summer, so they're aware of how they need to track that.
So could CICS pay for that collateral service? Or is it that they're only able to pay YSF for the direct treatment? They're not able to pay for family to come in to have a staffing, you know, have a what are we going to do, where are we going type of meeting. I thought that could be paid through Medicaid. So
yeah, and CICS they were asked for funding, and they are providing funding for the therapy. They're not splitting hairs. They don't need to split hairs, though, like the county does. So they could apply. So theirs is a fee-for-service. It's an hour of therapy, and if it costs $120 an hour to provide that therapy, CICS will pay the $120.
Okay. So this is just people who are not covered even under CICS?
And outside the money, the pool.
Right.
County.
Yeah, and I'm not.
Rather than the pool of funds.
Still confused, though, about why we would have any mental health money outside the pool funds unless they were for juveniles. Is that what you're saying? It's because it's someone under 18?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
yeah.
Where I was stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
you. It. Yeah, it's under 18, and I believe they need to, the juvenile court contract read that they need to. That is all I have on the application.
Okay. Thank you. I know we were talking a few days ago about January being highly packed for you in your schedule because of assets. At the same time, we're doing budgeting. So thank you, Deb, for all that extra time you're given. All right. I wonder if either of you have any comments about the budgets or the process.
No, so I agree with Linda. I'd like us to move the 1637 down to the 1900. So that's line 45, zero that out, take that 1637 down to line 48 and add it to the 1900, making that line item 3,537. It holds ERP harmless, allows them to utilize dollars as they see fit, and it keeps us from potentially duplicating services and the whole Pandora's box of other agencies wanting to request these kinds of support dollars in the future. So, I'm with Linda.
Second. Wasn't that a motion?
You made the motion early. I guess I better make the motion.
No, I'll like a very direct motion at this
point. Yeah, I'll make the motion.
And I second the motion.
Okay, any further discussion? Supervisor Sanders.
Aye.
Supervisor Murphy.
Aye.
Supervisor Olson. Aye. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Absolutely.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1966, Gilbert Residential Partial Subdivision. Hello, Amelia.
Hello, how are you guys?
Just fine, thank you.
Good. There's a keyboard over here. So this is a residential partial subdivision of an approximately 12-acre parcel. It's a two-lot. There is an existing dwelling on lot two. That dwelling replaced the farmstead, which allowed the parcel to be divided off into that 12-acre configuration. I think it's 2012. Yeah, is it recording now?
Yeah.
Okay. And so since 2015, that division took place in 2015, any further division has to take place in the subdivision. This property is zoned A1 agricultural, and the intent is to create another lot to construct another dwelling. Property owner wants to build a second home on that lot one. They are requesting this residential partial subdivision. I'm just going to pull up the PowerPoint. It's kind of nifty. Okay. You can see a photo of it here. So this is at 5405 7290 Street outside of Huxley. The property owner is William Gilbert. This is the lot configuration I'm kind of talking about. So here's the existing 12-acre piece, the rectangle, and the proposal is split out 1 acre for lot one to build a second dwelling. This is the plot. We kind of went through the history already while the PowerPoint was coming up. You can see the location here. So we are approximately 1.6 miles northwest of the city of Huxley. We did receive a resolution from them already. And there are adjacent parcels, mostly in row crop production, and a few farms that. There's 31 parcels within a half mile, 9 contain single family dwellings. 19 would be considered buildable. They meet that 35 acre size requirement in the A1 district. Reflective of the general character of having larger lots of row crop production. You can see that the parcel is in row crop production currently, rented out. So about 1 acre would be taken out of production to construct the second dwelling. That does represent a pretty small portion of the 12-acre parcel. This is designated as conservation area by the CTC plan. We do have principles to protect farmland, but again, creating the second lot would take out 1,000 acres from production. So we are looking northeast of the existing dwelling on proposed lot 2 in this photo. And this is east along 290th Street. Now we're looking back west. You can see the existing dwelling on lot 2 and lot 1. And this is looking northeast at proposed lot 1. So right by that tree line. And this is looking southeast with the ag land. And this is looking west on 290th Street. So these are the applicable regulations for a residential parcel subdivision format in this proposal. And we did wrap this for interagency review. We had a few questions about improvements that had been made to the structures and new structures that had been built. We didn't have record permits. Permits have since been submitted. One, we were unable to issue a permit for it because it was an existing shed located within the required setback. The property owner had volunteered to work with us to remove that or move it. And that would be required as part of getting a preliminary development permit for the new home on lot 1 or just by the end of 2019. We'll work through that administratively with them. The engineer noted that they need a permit for a new driveway there, so they need a new drive onto lot 1. And environmental health just noted that they might not be able to put grassy lateral on lot 1 due to soil conditions. It might be a different type of thing. And City of Huxley did approve the request and emailed notification letters on January 29th. And no comments were received from property owners or from property owners that received the notice. So just in summary, again, all requirements are met. Both lots will have frontage on 290th Street, and the purpose is to accommodate construction of an additional one-story home for the current property owner. The property is designated ag conservation area in our C2C plan, but lot 1 is 1 acre where the new dwelling will be built, and that represents less than 8% of the existing parcel that may be put to take mass production. And the general vicinity is large agricultural. So with that, we recommend approval of Resolution 19-26 for the Residential Parcel Subdivision Class Gilbert Subdivision. Any questions?
Laura, I'll move approval of Resolution 1966.
And should I just call me while we're at your comments?
You can ask, but I've used first names for the last 8 years, and I'm going to use the first names.
I would second the motion.
Any discussion? Okay. Supervisor Sanders.
Aye.
Supervisor Murphy.
Aye.
Supervisor Olson.
Aye.
Okay, you have it. Thank you for
presentation.
Yeah, let's see if I can. Okay, get out of the new technology. So, Leanne Harder, discussion and consideration of good luck. 2019 technical assistance program. Good morning.
Good morning.
This item is something that comes before the board annually following the budget work session. Generally, the budget work session. It did outline the background. In the memo that was prepared for today's agenda. Just simply, this is a program that was started in 2014. It ran 14-15, took off 16 in 2017 and 2018. It's for communities smaller than 3,000 persons in size. We go back to the 2010 census. Looking forward to a couple years changing that to 2020 census. Fully located within Story County, we do have portions of Shawwell, but they are excluded from this program because Polk County is a controlling county. So there are 10 eligible communities. Over the years, not all 10 eligible communities have taken advantage of the program. It's been anywhere from 4 to, I think, the most 1 year was 6. There are 7 communities. What we've done is a couple different ways, but the first year and subsequent years, we've done funds up to $3,000 of the total project cost for a community for technical assistance. That project actually, though, could have started July 1st of this fiscal year. as long as it's done by June 30th of the fiscal year. So the project does not have to occur during this time window on this program for it to be approved by the board. It could have started last July, but it has to be finished by the end of the fiscal year. So that makes sense. Want to make sure I explained it correctly. So again, today is the background information, and if the board does want to continue the program this fiscal year, I'll come back next week with a resolution on the consent agenda, and then following that, kick it off with distribution to the eligible community with a one-page application with a letter to all the mayors and just the mayors. Any questions? Okay, I'll take a motion, please.
Yeah, so I would move to do this program for this year.
Second. Any discussion? Supervisor Sanders.
Aye.
Supervisor Morgan.
Aye.
Supervisor Olson. Aye. Thank you. Is there any next up here also?
Yeah.
All right, well then, not standing up, but sitting back down here. Okay. So, why don't you take us through discussion and consideration of the 2019 Urban Renewal Area Program.
Well, while I bring up another presentation, this is, again, something generally the 10 years are important to the Board of Supervisors. The presentation should look rather familiar for at least two of you, if not all of you, sitting in the audience. It's essentially what I do every year. Same presentation. I know I don't have a copy. Supervisor Olson did hand out something prior to the meeting, so when I get after I finish my presentation,
certainly have extra copies up there if you want to propose change.
Thank you. Let me pull this up. Sorry. The new technology has it's really amazing to it. Now you can see the convoluted
mess on HR. I wonder if you know, we almost get to have like a training session on it, right? For everybody to come in and practice who's presenting regularly.
I'm not sure anyone can be trained on my HR.
Okay. We'll take your word for it.
So, again, this is something annually that comes before the board of supervisors. It is set forth in our economic development policies and procedures that were adopted in 2011 and really set the stage for using the tax increment revenue financing strategies with our wind turbines in the Northeast, well now throughout Surrey County, and then better equipment here along Highway 30 between Eaton and Nevada. In the policies and procedures, it sets forth four levels of eligibility, and I'll get to them at the end. Transportation infrastructure enhancement, public land and trail improvement, communication and utility infrastructure expansion, and Main Street and Town Center revitalization. So for communities and entities seeking funding for this program, they need to fit into one of those four categories. It's a lot easier to just arrow. The strategies and objectives also state that no tax increment, rebate, grants, loans, or assistance to private businesses are allowed or is discouraged by that language. It states in recognition of government's limited appropriate role in the private business cycle, Surrey County will not use TIF funds to state, and so forth. And this was a direction of the board in 2011, but they did work with council to set up the program. Next slide, it does require, and this is the added, this 4 years into the program, I believe, that initially there was not a required match specified in the program. It was an expectation. They didn't have a percentage, and so we do have that now in the program guidelines. And then just some idea of where we've been in the past on program awards. Nearly every community in some way has been touched by this program. Actually, the amount I handed out yesterday in a bar sheet that Shelley, I did provide a copy for you,
It's a little bit more telling. This is all the projects that have been funded using urban renewal funds. I don't have the slide in front of everyone in the audience, is the projects that have been under the jurisdiction of Story County. So Davis Lake, the paving, the bike lane to 100 Club Road, paving is quarter mile 590th Avenue, north of the intersection of US Highway 30, and of course the Tedesco and Rapid Line Corridor, and Prairie Rail Trail improvements. So those are five Story County jurisdictional projects that really do take the amount funded up to about $7.76 million. Which, but if you look at just those projects excluding Story County, it's about $1.3 million. So with that, I'm here today to, one, really determine is this a program that we as an entity do want to continue along this fiscal year, this next fiscal year. I ask that selfishly at this point because as we advertise and have work sessions with applicants, we need a looming deadline that seems far away, but really looking back and people know this is public hearings, whatever, maybe it's December 1st. We really need to start the process sooner rather than waiting until August, which we have done in the past, and it gets to me kind of scary. I don't like seeing that deadline when I close. And then if we do go forward with the program this year, what type of funding is available, and then what does the program look like, and that gets to we'll hand it out for the meeting. So based on direction today, I'll be back in the future with possibly amendments to the plan and that kind of policies and schedules. So, do you have any questions?
Thank you. And between the chart you'd already put together in the presentation and then the supplemental, which of course is available to anyone who requests it, it's a very clear clear idea about what this program has done within Story County. So I'm going to open it up to the two supervisors for any comments. Possibly, I'm not sure whether there's, I see some numbers in front of Supervisor Sanders, and he usually is pretty good with numbers. If he'd like to discuss something, I'm not sure if they're related to this particular agenda item or not, or Supervisor Merkin.
Yeah, so I would just note that Story County has invested just over $7 million, and we've seen almost $14.5 million. That leverage itself to almost $14.5 million in improvements in our community. So it's a program that I think we're seeing some benefit with. I think that we need to recognize that this year, based on our conversations at this point with the budget, there's about $190,000 or so that's under our current policies and regulations. There's about $190,000 available. So as I see it, we've got several options in front of us. We can decide not to do anything, in which case that roughly $190,000 would roll back to all the taxing. We could decide to continue to run the program as we're running it, which would mean there would become opportunities for our communities and others to make application to share in some portion of those grants. We could recognize that we're going to have a conversation, of course, I think you said on the 19th, about the Healthy Life Center and whatever we're going to do with the Healthy Life Center, if anything. This is very definitely one of the possible sources of revenue to do something if we decided to do something. And then you also, you wrote up some proposals for us to start to include housing or potentially include housing as part of this. And so I think we need to talk it through. I would be reticent for us to make any decisions today simply because we've got some other conversations to have that are going to impact where we're headed. But I think it's important that we keep all our options open and recognize that this is a potential source for multiple different things, or nothing, but multiple different things.
Supervisor Market, any comments so far about what Supervisor Sanders said?
Well, I'm kind of also thinking about all the things we have on our plate in terms of the ask of Life Center, the interoperability, radio communications, talking about, but we have, and we haven't completed our budget for FY20 or what kind of recommend. So I would say we could wait. Leanne, you say usually in August is when?
Well, in the past 3 years.
Okay.
I've been bringing the proposed changes to the plan because not only are there potentially proposed changes to policy in front of the board to possibly consider on the plan or the rural plan itself, if Story County were to open it up for a program like we've done in the past with using $190,000, that plan needs to be amended out of this process. That process does take at least one or two meetings. We have to amend the ordinance at all. That doesn't lengthen it out. So I've had the target date to start the plan review in August. That gives us that process. If we wait till August to start all this, then I get there. But I know we've done it in the past couple years when we've had to amend the plan for TEDxCo. We've done it twice. And if we get much past August when we're amending the plan, then I'll be really nervous, but we do have a lot. And that's why I wanted to start the question. And quite frankly, I'm naming a lot of operational committees to what's happening.
Right.
As they build their budget as well.
I'm glad we're all three in agreement that probably nothing's going to happen today because we do have several items that are going to come that we need to discuss in the next couple of weeks. I did try to get the Healthy Lifestyle Center scheduled for next week. Unfortunately, I think it's, let me rephrase that because I don't want it to come out like it started. I think it's very important that our Director of External Operations, Beth Childress, be here, and she's on vacation next week. So doing it on the 12th is not, I think, a good thing because we're not going to have information we need from Beth there. So, okay. I also agree. We're having another workshop this afternoon. So about what are we going to do about balancing our budget. And as far as what I propose is a pretty straight policy change based solely on what type of projects we might entertain from communities that would broaden the list a little bit. So that certainly can wait if we want to do that. So I'm in agreement with that. That means that we would not have this on until, I believe, the 26th. The problem with that, I'm thinking out loud here, is Supervisor Sanders is gone on February 26th and March 5th. Now, that moves us up to the 12th of March to bring this back before the board. And Leanne, then if we were able to work with you to get any amendment to the policy in, and then would you be able to start getting out the information as soon as possible to still make your August preferred?
Yeah, I think if we're able to, if I'm able to draft amendments to the policies and bring them forward for board's consideration toward the end of March.
Okay.
March 26th, Tuesday. That would allow me then to, I think those policies probably need to go over the week in a week in advance of actually approving the policy.
Sure.
The year.
Okay.
Then we could have a work session to go with the people. I'd like to, if that isn't the August session,
sure.
I like done that the past few years. I think we could use the staff time to have the community come here and know what the expectations are from the county, but then we also have a heads up. We clearly outline what the deadlines are, clearly outline the deadlines, so those are not missed. We're not in unfortunate situations like we have been in the past. So, yeah, if you're saying late May, early June, then I will I'll start
thinking
about this. And that's why I wanted now to start the conversation.
So, just to clarify, that would be we vote on the 26th, so we would discuss it on the 19th, March 19th.
No, I will not be here on March.
Well, then we no, won't discuss it. We will go ahead and discuss it on the 26th and vote on the first meeting in April. Okay, great. I do see Mark Jackson, administrator. No, he does not care to come up. I know that this probably is a little frustrating in the community since you're already getting those calls, what are you doing? And I've had inquiries also, and so I understand this will push them back a little bit as they're working on their budgets, but I see Mr. Jackson is willing to say no problem, so at least it is. All right. Thank you very much for, once again, a really good PowerPoint that lays it out in very clear terms. Thank you very much.
And thanks for being able to give us one more time on this.
So the next one is of the 2019 communications plan.
Is it still morning? It is.
It is. It's really 19 minutes to go on one.
That's interesting. I can just go through the plan. I don't need that. Okay. What's placed on your agenda is your draft 2019 communication plan. If you went back and compared it to 2018 plan, it should look extremely similar. What I intended to just briefly tell you is the proposed modifications. If you jump to page 6, my apologies to those listening that you cannot do this, but page 6 under the about two-thirds of the way down under the strategy to share the Story County vision with the general public and decision-makers. The first bullet point did read that just the Human Resources Department was creating onboarding materials. We're suggesting and adding in recruitment program materials. And Noel Mbachi himself had a meeting with Samantha Ford yesterday and are waiting for a proposal from Zayo for attendance such as these two items. And the next item down, consistent messaging and branding, we did remove the reference to a website redesign that did get accomplished last year. I'll come back to the bullet on our story. On the last bullet on that page, on the end, we have to create a photo repository for the storage of images. Jumping back to our story, we currently published this quarterly in the Sun. And you're getting some estimates or having conversations.
Right, I haven't been able to make contact with that.
I don't know if that's something you plan. You can leave that discussion till later, or I did just want to point that out. Next page, under the first strategy, I did remove the water meeting. That seems like that we had seen some decline in attendance, and that's really to remove that out. And then the last four bullet points under the first strategy are all new. Those are analyzing website tools, modules, and capabilities for potential implementation. There are a lot of modules within our Civic Plus program that, like Lynn County, for example, uses, I think, Civic Send for their e-newsletters. I'd like to find an opportunity to see what available that we're not using right now to its full potential. That's what that gives us. The next one is conducting a technology needs analysis related to communication strategies. Quite simply, this is having someone look at the system I'm running, the system the interns running, our ancillary products and like the cameras, everything we're using, make sure we're using everything we need and having a good sense of or I'm into. I run into issues continually on the tablet with these there are different solutions. Just having reach out to IT and having someone else help us on that.
When are you scheduled for replacement? Because you're using your tablet right now instead of a desktop or a laptop. So do you know when you're rescheduled?
I think of next year. And I was a year before you guys said
okay. It just my, as you were discussing those various strategies, take a look at, is it maybe that it's more effective for you to have the tablet as a backup and to have a stronger processing system for videos? Okay, thank you.
The next one is reviewing survey tools and mechanisms for possible implementation. This is one of the strategies in the CGC plan as well, and there are funds in the proposed budget for fiscal year 20 for survey, whether it be Survey Monkey or whatever it may be. And then recognition media partners during the annual Sunshine Week. And for this, we get them both a copy where we invite them and a press release list to come and meet with you all and appreciation. Next is engage the community through service and recognition. The last two bullet points on that include leadership in Nevada and Box City within Nevada School of Community Services.
Now, I have a question about leadership in Nevada being there, but not leadership teams. But does that, because we have a much deeper involvement with leadership in Nevada?
I serve on the steering committee for leadership in Nevada, and they have, they have a different approach to the county government sessions than the leadership program.
Okay. So what about if we expanding into leadership groups as a statement there for others like leadership aims, or if we would be invited to be on some kind of presentation or participation with something over at Iowa State, et cetera, to add a category, not delete leadership Nevada, but add in a separate category that notes that we all are asked at times to give some type of participation related to a leadership development.
Could I just make a comment?
Sure.
And this is me being new. I'll say that as long as I can. There are action steps. I don't think the action steps are, I wouldn't take them as being that's the only thing we can do under for these strategies. I think something else came up that fit into engaging the community to service and recognition. That wouldn't mean we couldn't go ahead and do that.
Right.
My thought about it.
Okay. So, but that's why I get a little concerned about putting in just one community with there, whereas before, didn't it end with wellness initiatives?
It did last year, but in previous years, the leadership of Nevada was running. Every other year program, we had it in the communication plan, same with Bond City.
How much do you think the plan is directly related to the fact that we have only one person charged with all of these duties, as opposed to some duties came along that were shifted to someone else? I'm not thinking about replacing you or anything, just those can't, okay? It's more along the...
I updated my resume for the test last year, so I'm...
All right. That's not where we're headed here. Okay. Instead, though, it's talking about more inclusiveness to allow staff to go ahead and maybe help on some of these projects or even elected officials. That's what I'm looking at here. It's a thought, but I think it hangs right on to Supervisor Martin's So my point is, I think a little bit, though, that the leadership Nevada is associated specifically with our outreach session project manager right now, correct? You're on it because of it being new, rather than if you were so booked in time that you weren't able to do that anymore, then it was unlikely to shift to someone else within the county, correct?
Right.
Yeah. That's the difference. Food for thought, that's not something that I feel holding up a great deal on. You might want to give it some thought.
I think this started out as at least unintentionally, but it definitely started out as the work program for your position as it related to communication. And it sounds like through the years it's evolved a little bit, Linda, maybe moving more closely to what you're talking about. But it still has the flavor of being your work program. Am I seeing it wrong?
Well, if you look at, we'll look at there's, I'm going to go to the Box City. That won't just be me.
Okay.
Planning and development will be assisting with that. I think I'll be reaching out to the three of you to be at the open house for ribbon cutting, to be that scripture moment and everything that happens. So there are...
Sure, but you would still be the point person organizing that, much like some of the other bullet points. And again, maybe we're moving away from it, but I think it's important for us to recognize that the first time we went through this, it was, and that would have been, what, 4 or 5 years ago, it was pretty clearly your work program as it related to communication, and it still got that feel, right? So if that's not what it is, and maybe that's not what it needs to be, we just probably need to go back in and take a look at the full-blown communication strategies for the county. Or this is very clearly direction, as I see it, direction to Leanne in her position as our communication, having primary communication responsibilities.
If I can interject just a second. Okay. So I agree, it sounds like we've got an assessment of going forward. Of course, we were here to carry all that forward through. So maybe what we do is it's a great plan in so many ways, okay, is that maybe we lead off, take it just this way, the way it is, and then as we go through the year, you and Deb Childress could go ahead and maybe start to make note a little bit about what is it other people can do, what is it I can expand as in an outreach communications role, even the who's doing it, so that we can take the next year to assess about going more toward a plan that would be applicable to win the lottery. And So does that sound comfortable with everyone as far as my issue here about leadership aims and the Box City is right now, leaving it alone and then taking the next year to pay attention to what types of things do you think are because of you and what types of things are overall.
I think the last two bullets, leadership in the Box City, maybe could be put under something that talks about projects with other communities. I mean, because one thing I was hearing is it talks specifically about Nevada, but it doesn't talk about other communities in Story County, and it seems like we're just focusing on Nevada. That might be the one thing I would look at there, is to try to kind of generalize maybe that and expand it a little bit to say, you know, basically we need to be working with the other communities as well in these kind of initiatives. And maybe not for now, but something to think about for next year. The next time you work on the language and work on the actions.
All right. Hold on. There's one other change to note on page 7, and that's there's a bullet point referencing that EOC is SF-15, essential service function, external affairs. That, I think, can be removed at this point. And then on the back, obviously we need a picture. Unless you just like to go forward and bring up.
I know I'm just pulled up on the picture a little bit, requiring advance notice, as I think I mentioned in an email to everybody. I'm high maintenance when it comes to posed photos. So I can't just be, have it sprung on me right after a meeting. But certainly, are the other two of you up for? How many photos taken again?
I'm low maintenance. I can do it anytime.
Okay. All right. Supervisor Burton.
Anytime.
Okay. All right. I will come down with Leah. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments from the two of you? I feel it's a good, solid plan. You've added in a couple of the items we've talked about over the last year, like a possibility of starting some kind of photo archive and put that in the button, in the budget. And I feel that the communication that we had earlier, where we didn't have supervisors all on board at the same time,
is something that we don't need to address with statements in here right now, unless the other two do. You've clearly indicated county. Once again, that's been in there all along, county with capital, which I believe clarifies. If not, please let me know. Clarifies enough that the content is related to Story County staff expenditures. Or does anybody else think that our story, from an editorial standpoint, should allow content from outside entities? I'm just bringing it up now. This would be the place we were to add some statement about what would be acceptable outside advertising outside.
I don't think we need a statement. I think that can all be handled in the editing process. You know, we handled it last year when we had a disagreement. We'll do that again if we have a disagreement.
Okay. Yeah. So is that going to be a problem for you, Leanne, in going through the entire process and about bringing something, whether it be content or something, to the board, asking for board direction? I know while I'm chair, I'm going to ask for a formal vote rather than a consensus. So is that any problem with the other two supervisors?
So are you specifically talking anything with our story?
I'm actually specifically talking about anything for our communications plan for Story County. You remember there was a separate discussion going on about the same time having to do with the Veterans Affairs Commission notifying veterans where they could get discounts on dental work and discounts on food, and it was giving veterans free lunch, okay? And so we had all said at that time that discussing the communications plan was the time to iron those issues out about what was actually acceptable for the county with county tax dollars to be paying to promote outside entities, and under what point did we feel that an article submitted by an outside entity was, or written by our staff about an outside entity, was appropriate to put into any kind of correspondence associated with Story County. It happened to be our story was one example of it, but I go back to the Veterans Affairs. I was concerned about some of what was being posted on the website and concerns about what was being sent out for the November Veterans Affairs. So that is, I'm not proposing language at this time, but the other will be if there will be a vote at the board table about what's acceptable or not for some content and communications going forward.
I'm a little confused. Are you saying that any time any communication goes out from the county department that it would be reviewed by the supervisors prior to going out? Is that what you suggest?
I would prefer that not happen. The way to take care of that is to either have an understanding clearly set by this board and our communications department that when you go through the historical overview and every time you read county with a capital C, that it is industry standards and general knowledge that refers to the entity of Story County itself, Linda. Barring that, unfortunately, we have had some incidences in the last year, year and a half. I mean, two of them. There was also the tweet, or the, I believe it was a tweet, yes, on Super Bowl Sunday about the Super Bowl using a county account. There was also an incident that I called the sheriff on right away about a meme that appeared, once again, through Twitter that definitely gave at the viewing of the meme until you opened it up, and even after opening it up, I felt it conveyed a less than respectful portrayal of a black man. And so if the real agreement we need here is, does county mean county as in an official entity, Story County, or is county whatever we want to call it by the people that we've charged with our various media accounts and our printed materials? That That's the issue. It really, so that's what happened last year with our story. It's what happened with the VA administration or VA affairs about just putting on all of these first six people get a free haircut or what. I don't know exactly. One was a dentist, et cetera. That's what I'm talking about. I don't want to edit everything, but we've got to have some kind of understanding among employees who are charged with that, and I guess in the case of our story, it was the elected officials last year, about what puts forward the message that Story County wants to put forward.
If I might, I heard a lot of things there, yeah. And I think a couple of them are things that might fit into our acceptable use policy and don't need to come to the board, maybe just need to be, you know, if somebody notices and say, is this consistent with existing county policies?
And not to interrupt, but we are having the working group, and if we look at what Ames has done in the template, they do have an internal group that is kind of sounding board, or not let's say that punisher, but if there's something inappropriate, it does go through that mechanism on an internal basis.
And would that be all everything or just social media?
Well, that's specifically for social media, yeah.
And it's an after the fact kind of situation.
Right.
It's not a approve, it is a review and critique. And I'll just say this. So first of all, I'm not convinced. Board of Supervisors has never reviewed correspondence coming out from other boards and commissions. I'm not sure that legally, I haven't read the code closely enough, but I'm not sure that we have the authority to micromanage VA commissions' communications. Now, I tend to be with Morris that I think we got to be really, really careful about that. As far as this whole thing about the Our Story deal, what's important to remember there is that came to the Board of Supervisors, and it was approved by the Board of Supervisors. So holding that up like there was some big issue, we had one supervisor who disagreed with something. We have that today. We deal with that stuff and we move on. I think our communication plan is solid, and so in an effort to try to move us on, I'd move approval of our 2019 communication plan.
Okay. I'll second. All right. I will second this because overall, I think it is in paper. It's an excellent plan.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's, I guess, the tweaks that will come up from time to time. Okay. Discussion.
Yeah, I think we have the authority to deal with the tweaks as they come up. We have the authority to deal with the issues as they arise. Somebody shoots out a tweet that somebody thinks is not appropriate or doesn't fit. We deal with that after fact. But I think if we start to view ourselves as the gatekeepers where we're going to keep everything out, we're making a mistake.
And I do not want to be the gatekeeper.
Right, exactly.
It's more about getting everybody on the same page as what the approach is.
One thing I will throw into this discussion, which from my job experience, what from my previous existence, when I ran a government agency, one thing I recall is the more that you put in policy, the more discretion appropriately you give to your employees. And I think maybe that's the reason we might want to look at a little bit more policy so those issues don't need to come to the governing board, which means that we are micromanaging. So I would be in favor of looking at, are there some things we've learned over the last year that maybe we have agreement on if you're going to policy? Maybe we're not going to agree on everything, but maybe to get some basics into a policy, maybe it builds on the accessible use policy, maybe it comes into another policy, but give the guidance to our department heads, you know, elected officials can use that as law allows, whatever, but to not bring it back to our governing board here.
I agree with that. So hearing there's some basic consensus here, okay? Where we can go is we can take the, we got a motion on the floor and a second from me, okay?
then we could go ahead and vote on that. And then if we want to give some directions to staff as they move forward with this work group, is that an acceptable plan? And then the work group will be bringing back something to us later anyway on communications, at least for social media, that you could expand your work group to talk about just in general what language might come back still with communication plans later. It would be basically we approve today, we would move forward, and the work group would come back and offer amendments in the future. That's good for everybody? All right. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. We have an approved plan for right now, and I look forward to what the work group brings back in the future. So the next one is for Deb Silbrock. You can stay there, and here comes Alyssa Wingnall. And it's discussion and consideration of evaluation process for the Director of External Operations and County Services and the Director of External Operations and Human Resources. And thank you both for doing this and working on it. And I'll let you two start and talk about how this came to be and coming to the board.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start a little bit. So, Board of Supervisors would be responsible for these two positions, the evaluation on an annual basis. The process that has been in place is that the board chair has completed the evaluation and then submitted a merit increase form to the complete board for consideration and approval. As I see it, there are two options for the board to consider as part of the evaluation, so they can continue with that process. All supervisors have access to the evaluation. You know, can review it if they don't agree with it. It gets placed on the board agenda for discussion. So we can stick with the board chair completing that, or the board supervisors could name a different board member to complete that, or they could do the evaluation. Open session. With that, the employee would have the opportunity to request that to be done in closed session for Iowa code if they feel, you know, the right piece of information that's going to happen to them on speaking open session. I did reach out to some other counties that have done this in the past. They handle it different ways. Some do it in open session. Some have all supervisors, three or five, maybe four. Then that meeting does happen in open session. You know, like I said, the employees do have opportunities to request that. Looking at our situation, we do audio and video record our board meetings, so if it would happen in any board meeting, that would be recorded on those in addition to the minutes. Does it have to happen in the future board meeting? No, you can call an open meeting at any point and have that evaluation.
Did you have anything to add?
Well, just a comment for consideration, depending which way the board decides to go, but maybe something to include that would enhance the evaluation is what's known as a 360 evaluation, and to solicit feedback from other individuals or entities that work with Alyssa and I. And I know there are different kinds of 360 evaluations out there. Some allow the employee to maybe select a couple people to be interviewed, as well as the board maybe select a couple of people. So it can be fashioned in any way possible, but I would ask for that to be part of the consideration when looking at doing these evaluations.
Great. I asked for them to put together options and think about what they wanted, which is how we kind of went with the Wignall's evaluation is coming up, and we need to get started on it. And in the past 2 years since I've been on the board, it's been the chair who has done most of them. We had in January of 2018 requested, there was a consensus among the previous board members
that all three would be involved in the input, with the chair doing the final evaluation review. That happened with one of the two employees, not with the other one. So clearly, we need to be consistent in how the Board of Supervisors are reviewing their two employees, and that if supervisors ask to be involved in the process, that supervisors are included in the process. The issue that really comes up, the big one, is open meetings, or open, you know, is that even two of us passing around a piece of paper violates it. And so that makes it very difficult to determine how do the other two supervisors, if you go with the one taking the lead, you know, how does that happen and we don't break the open meetings law?
Well, the question about the latter part, I like 360 evaluations. I think they bring in a lot of things that otherwise may not get, you know, and the ones that I've been participated in, I've had, have also included people who are direct reports to the person who's evaluated. My first question is, do either of you have trouble with your direct reports being part of the people who give feedback in 360? Then secondly, as the 360 process is put together, it might also include some other people in the community or in the county, you know, that work with you often and have good feedback. My question goes back then to open meetings. If the other two supervisors are included in that, but that is only one-way communication from the supervisor to the chair, and there's no discussion of that, I would not see that as being in any way violating the open meetings. But I'm not an attorney.
No, you're 100% correct.
So I'm favoring a 360 process that would include direct reports, perhaps some other people that you work with that you think would be good people to get feedback. Because the evaluation's for you. It's to help you improve your performance. So you know, who you think you would like to hear from, plus allowing the other two supervisors, mm-hmm. who you are very valuable resources for, obviously, to have some input as well.
We have done the 360 in the past, it's been quite a few years. I believe the information, I know I had an evaluation, I think, mm-hmm. from my graduate position about 8 years ago, and the information came in, I think, anonymous. I mean, I didn't know where the information came from. They just call it data, put it in an aggregate form, and then we review that information.
So would that be, since there are just the two of you, might that be a situation where for you, Alyssa, Deb would collect and collate everything and bring it to the chair, or and then reverse, you would collect and collate everything?
I would suggest that our HR general is doing that.
Got it.
So she would be over to both. Yes, yeah, she administering the evaluation.
Okay.
Process for the county. I do want to be real careful as far as before discussing or deliberating or doing any of that. That would make me nervous. That would be a violation of the open meeting, in my opinion.
So I'm hearing affirmation kind of
this is our chair's responsibility to pull all of it together. But just because it's the chair's responsibility doesn't mean it has to solely rest with the chair. So using Noel in this case to compile, I like the idea of a 360. We've talked about that now for the last few years, and just logistically, okay, as we moved into the merit-based system for raises, many times our performance evaluations turned into a deadline rather than a growth opportunity. And I like the idea of moving to a 360. Kind of method. I still believe it falls to the chair of the board to compile the information and ultimately compile the full evaluation, because there's going to be opportunities in 360. You're going to get kind of the scatter effect sometimes of what you hear, and I believe it's up to our chair to compile that information and then ultimately make a recommendation for how that impacts compensation.
Supervisor Murphy, could you be weighing in
on the process with them.
And let me clarify something. Was the person you were suggesting should compile the results of this 360 would be Nicole?
No, that position, I know it.
She reports to you.
She does.
That's my concern about that. I would not think that the person who reports to you should be the person compiling it. I think it should be the chair.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's the chair, but I would simply suggest that Noelle is the, in my mind, Noelle is the correct facilitator for gathering the information, providing the information to the chair, and then our chair is responsible for compiling all that information. But logistically, I see Noelle as the one who is gathering the information.
Sending it out to get the feedback. I don't think that position from Noelle would be providing any of the decisions on the scoring or anything like that. That would be if the board decides that they're going to give that decision to the chair would be the one that does the evaluation. Facilitate gathering information and give to the chair.
So well, I'm sure that Noelle could put together the instrument, the 360 that we send out.
We have it. It might need some updates. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I use Noelle assisted me last summer. I did a pilot of a 360 with a department head evaluation just to kind of get a sense of how that may work. And so Noelle helped the HR intern help pull the actual tool together. But Noelle did all the reflection of that the people responding to the evaluation were kept confidential. And then she just provided me with the responses. So I found that very helpful and very capable of it.
It sounds like we've put together a workable evaluation process. If that's comfortable for the two of you, comfortable for the other two supervisors, it's comfortable for me. And does anyone feel that we need a vote? Yes, Shelley.
Yeah, let's just say that you want to do that process with the help of the.
The board chair involved. I would say that.
Yeah, so I'll make a motion that our board chair is responsible for putting together the job evaluations for our two direct reports.
Okay. Second. Any further discussion? Supervisor Fanning?
Aye.
Supervisor Merkin?
Aye.
Supervisor Olson?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of a decrease in recommended compensation for the Board of Supervisors pursuant to Code of Iowa 331.907, subsection 3. The auditor has presented this, but I believe I can just lead through what the issue came up. And Supervisor Merson was there. It was during the Compensation Board. That meeting that was held on Monday, January 28th. And what happened is after all of the presentations, et cetera, and the meeting was near its last few minutes, and I believe the chair said, do we have anything else to do? And one of the other elected officials, I think in an act of kindness, trying to see that everyone's done, hadn't really paid attention then. I believe it was 2 years ago, in 2017, I think in January 2017, when the supervisors, led by Supervisor Sanders, had brought forward a proposal that the board chair no longer receive an extra $1,000 compensation compared to the other two supervisors, and that was what had been agreed upon. And last year that was enacted fine. This year what happened is that in a meeting, I believe, different end of the meeting, that when that remark was kind of passed along to the board chair, they called for an extra $1,000 compensation to the board. And I was talking to someone then, under my voice, and I didn't even catch the motion, or I stopped it right away. And so instead, when the minutes came out, it showed that they had voted extra $1,000 for the chair. And that is not the current plan under which I thought we were going to operate. And so this is the opportunity under Iowa Code for us to put the salaries for the three supervisors even again and basically veer off from the compensation board's recommendation of an extra $1,000 for the chair.
Are you ready for motion?
I am.
Okay, I would move that pursuant to Code of Iowa Section 331.907, sub 3, that we decrease the compensation on page 2 recommended to the chair by $1,000.
Yeah, I'll second that. I felt strongly about this in 2017 and 18. I mean, there is very clearly more work when you're the board chair. It is, but that's what we sign up for. You know, that's what we ask for. And I believe that Story County gets it right in paying all of our non-specialized elected officials, meaning, you know, sheriff has to have specialized training, county attorney needs to be an attorney. The rest of the elected officials, short of qualifying to be on the ballot, you don't have to have anything special. And I think it sends the right message that Story County decides to pay all its elected officials the same. And so, Lord, I'm just appreciative that you brought this forward. It would have been easy to say, oh, that's a mistake, and let it go on through. I like this.
Okay. All right. I'm assuming that we're done with this discussion. So, therefore, we'll take a vote. Supervisor Merkin?
Aye.
Supervisor Sanders?
Aye.
Supervisor Olson? Definitely yes. Moving on now. We are now once again ready for Leanne Harder, and we're discussing a direction on the draft capital improvements plan, which our CIP, and public review process. Hello, Leanne, again. We're no longer after or before you. Sorry.
Well, one of the slides from today's agenda, which I was very familiar with, what was handed out with the budget for books and was initially seen to kick off the budget work session. What I'm hoping to accomplish in the remainder of the time we have with you is to go through and notify you of the proposed changes that I understand based on the work session, get your feedback. I will take those draft copy that then becomes available for the public for review. We have a comment sheet we always include. Past years, we've sent this out to City Hall and the library with several copies and a comment sheet. I don't know that that's necessary. We never received anything back. So maybe just keeping it online, using social media to have the public comment. The public comment period would run from essentially tomorrow afternoon, as soon as I can get the changes done, through up and through March 5th. I would be here on March 5th sharing the public comment. We received thus far receiving direction to bring for the draft plan for approval on the 12th. So that's the time frame. Just quickly some noted changes that, from my understanding, based on work session and then suggestions or requests. As part of this in the appendix, I intend to add a multi-year spreadsheet that goes by department, the amount. And then, obviously, when you go the way back, the new picture needs to be added. Then on page 8, and that will not be in time for the late show, I do need to get that. Then on page 9, I did leave the TBDs in for the Justice Center project, and then the countywide interoperable communication system. I didn't know if we were at the stage yet that we can put them out in there. We have a potential budgeted amount, but the total amount is available to the interoperable communication system. And then, and so that carries forth for those projects. And then page 11, for the Dakin's Lake Campground, Dakin's Lake Playground and the McFarland Nature Playscape. Potential funding sources would be Friends of Conservation rather than general fund grants. And then the following page, page 12, is removing the feasibility study for McFarland Park or Conservation Center in McFarland Park. And then again, the TBD on the next item, the Administration Building and Coalition. And I think that is it.
So the one change I heard for sure was on page 12, removing the feasibility study.
And
changing. And they had questions on the other. So you guys hear another change to city document we're going to make? I got a little bit lost.
Friends of Conservation is the funding source for both the playgrounds at David Lake and the Farmer Park. And those are on page 11. I think the first and the last one.
I didn't catch that. Friends of Conservation for the playground and for which?
The playscape.
The playscape as well. Okay.
I have a question, and I'm just going to make sure with Lisa Markley that I capture it all.
At this point, yes.
I do have a question. It's on page 13, where we've got during 20, the sheriff facility, well, anyway, it's the interoperable communication system. We know it'll be roughly $3 million, and that's where we're likely to be spending that $3 million is during 2020, correct?
So we've also got that in 19.
The project is in both years.
Right, and what we don't, so what we know is if we bond, we got to bond by April 1st, which is in this fiscal year. It is really possible that there could be some expenditures in this fiscal year yet, and some in next year, and that's the reason, so I think the $3 million is a pretty good figure for us to have plugged in, but I couldn't tell you at this point where they both are.
Okay. Thank you.
Could it simply be put in there? I mean, I know it doesn't just follow exactly the way it's going to step it, but so we have in here that that's an estimated figure. Put it on page 9 under estimated budget amount, put estimated $3 million FY19 and 20.
So I would be, we could, absolutely. I would be more comfortable with 1.5 and 1.5 because what's going to happen is the backbone is going to get built first. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be roughly one, our share is going to be roughly 1.5. And then we're going to have the equipment component, which right now we're thinking is going to be 1.5, but we still got to have a lot of conversation to figure out exactly what that looks like. But if you want a number plug in, I'd say just plug 1.5 into both of them. And
on page 9 or on page 13?
Correct.
Correct. I would be comfortable with that because that gives us a sense of the type of extent, you know, sure, of money we're talking about. And I wonder if there were any other places where there were any to be determined.
The Justice Center remodel project, but we still don't have a number on that. Yeah, I actually had put 1.5 in here, and then I did it for the TBDs for the interoperable, just to let the citizens and everybody know, hey, you know, this is a project that we know roughly what it's going to cost, and this is what our totals would be. Then I go to out fiscal year 2021 from the standpoint that neither the rest of the Justice Center project is listed as an actual start. Even if it's got a TBD, we've got planning in fiscal year 20. So in fiscal year 21, keeping with wanting to keep our planning and sketches, et cetera, closer to when we're going to start a project, we should at least have it in there as a place marker. And then also, and this is from a priority level, that's for discussion as we work on the 21 budget, but also the same thing we did. We're admin building infill project. We have in 20 to do some initial planning work. So then at least let's put it as a placeholder in for 21.
I agree with both. Just with TBD.
Yeah, with just TBD. Yep. But at least then, heads up, people. And that's all I have.
So I'll move approval of the draft CIP to be sent out for public comment with noted changes.
Second. If no further discussion, Supervisor Sanders.
Aye.
And Supervisor Murphy.
Aye.
And Supervisor Olson. Aye. And thank you once again, Leah. busy time for you, too, with keeping track of everything that has to come forward. We are now in public forum number two. Anyone care to step forward at this particular time to comment on anything? Not seeing that, we're going to go to liaison assignments, city updates, and announcements. Supervisor Sanders.
Pass.
Okay. Supervisor Corbett. Okay, just a couple things I want to let everybody know about. HRDA, I think they had already announced, has decided to cancel the service contract with the Dallas and Madison County outside contractors. And HRDA is going to deliver themselves starting July 1st. The Dallas County Board of Supervisors, however, has said that they won't pay any money to HRDA for supporting the bus services. All I can say at this point is stay tuned. Okay? And I met with Gene Cressy of United Way of Story County, and we discussed different statistical data that can be used to determine need at Story County. And overall importance, rather than going back and forth about what statistical data may be used by any particular report, is that the understanding that we know there are people out there in need, and regardless of how you measure it exactly, and that the communication plan that it seems like United Way is working on is going forward, saying that each person's situation can be unique, and so they will or will not fit into one or more of the measuring metrics, but that still means we know we have issues, and we need to be conveying that as much as we can out of the county. And there are still some metrics, while not perfect, there are metrics that are very clearly trackable that will be used. And so I had indicated I wanted to dig further in to why there were some discrepancies, and that was my first discussion. Upcoming, everybody seems to remember, we have the secondary roads and county engineer work session. We also, coming up, and that is the afternoon of the January 12th, we will have a special, we'll have a regular meeting on the 19th, during which we will discuss the Healthy Lifestyle Center, or the Healthy Life Center, and its request. I'm still working on seeing if we can put together a special meeting on the Master Matrix outside of our usual Tuesday morning to allow it at an off-site location. And citizens for nominations for Citizen of the Year are due January 15th, so that's only 10 days away. If you know somebody who you think deserves that award, please nominate. Finally, applications for the Planning and Development position on the P&Z position are due on March 7th. That's the first application deadline.
That's
the Planning and Zoning Commission. Yes, sorry about that. And with that, if there is nothing else, I will take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. We are adjourned. Thank you. Hi. Sorry about this. We're running a couple minutes late.